I'll read some excerpts from a letter to begin. This is from January of this year. Dear friends, I remember sitting at Bishop Samuel Ruiz Garcia's table in Querétaro. He was telling me about the horror of attending the funeral of his colleague and dear friend, Bishop Oscar Romero, gunned down while saying Mass, with the holy vessels warm in his hands. Don Sam told me about the day of that funeral, in the cathedral in San Salvador, when the army opened fire on the mourners, and so many more died, and his witnessing of one woman in particular, and her agony. He spoke as if in a clouded dream, as if I had been there too, and together we were remembering and mourning. Later, when they took me to the bus station, he insisted on coming, and climbed out of the car, and blessed me, marking me with the sign of the cross on my forehead as one of Christ's own forever. Ours was a delightful and brief friendship between an old Mexican Roman Catholic bishop and a Canadian Anglican priest with a fierce love for Guatemala. I was invited into the circle only a short 5 years ago, first when I visited Mexico City and his team of peace builders at the Serapaz offices, and then a few months later when he came to visit Vancouver for a peace conference. His life and mine thereafter crossed over, intentionally and unintentionally. We were on the same path, though mine was 40 years behind and running to catch up. Oaxaca, Querétaro, Mexico City, Guatemala, his own beloved San Cristobal de las Casas, San Salvador, in each place a gathering of the family on fire for a world built on justice and righteousness, an end to violence and to greed. After hearing the news of his death, in my house in Santa Cruz, I sat in the chapel, lit candles, and cried alone. My friend Don Juan came by, and then went out and gathered some town elders, and we burned candles and palm, and kneeling, prayed together. Word went out, and a few other people came, former refugees, some of the 250,000 Guatemalans who had fled the genocide. It had been Don Sam who met them at the border. Short and stout, wearing gumboots, stood before the ravenous Guatemalan army in pursuit. They remember, and we gather in gratitude, and together we spread rose petals around his picture and leave him more candles. The next morning before sunrise, I am on the 5-bus trek to San Cristobal de las Casas to say goodbye. My friends are all coming down from the city. He is lying in the yellow cathedral. I mostly listen to these who loved him, who lived close to him, their innumerable stories, echoing mine, but so many more of them, of this man who refused to hate, even refused to hate those who clawed and ruined and did damage to others. In the face of that hate, this man acted out of love. When I read this letter, I think that out of the pain and out of the longing and out of the immeasurable suffering of the poor in Latin America, the flower of theology has been especially beautiful there. When I first encountered liberation theology in my early teens, it seemed like a miracle that people living on the very edge of disaster, oppressed to their limits, could believe that God not only cared about them, but had a preferential option for them. This seemed like a miracle of belief. And yet, as I grow older and I look at the situation with more critical eyes, I see that most of the voices who were active in the liberation theology movement have been educated men, speaking on behalf of the poor, perhaps, and certainly speaking with the best of intentions, but still, this was not theology that was coming from the poor in their voices. It was also not coming from women. It was not coming from queer people. It was not coming from indigenous people. It was not coming from people with disabilities. It was coming from a particular set of educated men. And so more and more as time goes on in Latin America, liberation theology is being left behind by these groups, especially women who are connected to indigenous communities, who are doing ecofeminist theology as an attempt to find their own voices and speak with their own experience. These women are describing their experiences of working within the systems of liberation theology without having a voice, striving for the liberation of all the oppressed people in their midst, while still finding their own ideas silenced. Even movements with great promise and great potential, like Latin American liberation theology, are finding that they too have caused pain, and that they too have been agents of oppression.